with information on the latest developments in assistive technology and initiatives from the studios of 2RPH in Sydney. RPH Australia brings you AbleQuest. Hello, I'm Marnie Roper. We have had the very good fortune to have Peter Ford, founder of Control Bionics, as a repeat guest on AbleQuest since our very first program in 2012. Over the years, we have tracked the progress of the life-changing assistive technology he invented, which helps seriously disabled people communicate. In the first program, Peter did an on-air demonstration of NeuroSwitch. He applied three sensors to Barbara Sullivan's forearm and connected those by wires to a laptop. NeuroSwitch was the first generation of the software, which worked by picking up minute electrical activity in the muscles, allowing the user to have some basic form of communication via a connected computer. Jump forward 6 years, and today Peter is here again in the studio to demonstrate the latest version, now called NeuroNode. And what a quantum leap! The new device is wireless, with a small sensor housed in casing not much bigger than a 50-cent piece. It can connect to any computer, iPad, tablet, iPhone, or other mobile device. This mobility makes it beneficial for carers as well as users. It's easy to learn and use and requires less effort to operate, and so lessens fatigue. In this two-part interview with Barbara Sullivan, Peter takes us through the milestones and technological advances that have resulted in NeuroNode, this groundbreaking piece of assistive technology.
What you're hearing is the sound of the NeuroNode beeping. And what, in fact, is the NeuroNode? Well, our guest today, Peter Ford, will be telling us all about this. We've last had Peter Ford on AbleQuest in 2015, and he was our very first AbleQuest interviewee back in, I think, about 2012. So we're delighted to have Peter back here today to talk about the latest progress in his amazing technology. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you, Bob. It's lovely to be back.
Peter made a huge leap at a particular point in his life from being a war correspondent for CNN and anchor and NBC anchor to being the founder of an amazing assistive technology, which became known as NeuroSwitch. Peter, just very briefly, tell us about why you made that leap and the early progress of NeuroSwitch.
In the very early days at CNN, Ted Turner had spent several million dollars buying what were then supercomputers to process news. And with some money left over, they bought a brand new Apple II desktop computer, which then was cutting-edge technology. And I used to walk past this on the way to the studio every day, and I got tired of not being able to use it. So I asked Rob Brown, who's the head of IT for CNN, for a lesson. And he said, give me $10. And I did, and he gave me one of the best buys I've ever made. It was called the Apple Basic Programmer's Guide. When I opened up the manual, it made sense. So 6 weeks later, I was writing code and doing some cool stuff with what were then theoretical robotics. And somebody at Harvard Med School heard about it and offered me a job at a research and development lab with the U.S. government, with the Veterans Administration. And so I moonlighted as a coder while I was still anchoring. And we were developing technology for people with disabilities using this what was then brand new technology of an Apple desktop. And that just evolved. And when I went to NBC in Miami and then NBC in Washington, I kept developing more and more code, was starting to work as a consultant to hospitals and rehab centers. It really chose me, not the other way around.
Just explain the basic technology that drove NeuroSwitch in those early days, and then you've made the leap to NeuroNode.
NeuroSwitch was the first jump that we made to neuroelectric signals. All technology that's designed to help people with disabilities is generally called assistive technology, or AT. And nearly all AT requires a muscle movement of some sort to initiate it. So for somebody who can't move or speak, but can maybe twiddle a finger, if you can press a small button, there's a button called Jelly Bean, which anybody who's worked in AT or disability communications will recognize. It's a very brightly colored press button. There's a sip and puff straw, which you occasionally see people using very often to drive wheelchairs or communicate by using air pressure, but still requires the muscles in your mouth. there are eye gaze technologies where you can look at a certain spot on a screen and make a letter come up, but you are using the six muscles in each eye to control that. So if any of those muscle movements is impacted in any way by a trauma or a progressive disease like motor neuron disease, those muscle switches no longer work. So what we decided to do was jump in ahead of the muscle activity and intercept the electrical signal coming from the brain to the muscle. And so we use a clinical grade sensor called an electromyograph sensor. Electro for electricity, myo for muscle. Graph it, put it up on a screen. We use those sensors, which are used in almost all clinics around the world for rehab. And instead of using it to study the muscle, we told a client or a patient, if you imagine moving that muscle and your brain can send a signal to it, we'll intercept it and you'll get that beep you heard at the beginning of the interview.
NeuroSwitch has taken a long time to develop. Talk about some of the main milestones in the development of NeuroSwitch.
Well, the first one was in 1999. And until then, I'd been developing this technology. I was working with a number of hospitals, a number of therapists, and I was working with a professor called Bernard Brucker, who was the head of biofeedback at the Miami School of Medicine in Florida. And we'd been using all kinds of other switches which required muscle movement. And there was a patient in Texas who had hit a tree at very high speed, had massive closed head injuries and high spinal cord injuries, was in a state that I don't like the term, but the diagnostic term was he was in a vegetative state, meaning he could not speak or move. They weren't sure whether he could think clearly. And he had been like that for several years. And Professor Brucker asked me if I had any ideas about it because we'd been developing these other switches. And I thought, well, let's try EMG signals. And they were all over the clock. He was so erratic that you couldn't rely on them. And I thought, well, sometimes things appear visibly. You know, you can actually see mathematics or code in your head. And I wrote an answer down on a 3x5 card and said, I think this might work. We can pull out a coherent piece of data from that erratic signal. And he said, go do it. And so I came back to Sydney and then went up to Toowoomba. I was visiting my folks, and in their guest house, I started writing this code and went back to the US and found the patient working with Professor Brucker. We put the sensor on, and this guy had not moved in years, couldn't even blink. They irrigated his eyes every 20 minutes. And Professor Brucker said, imagine moving your left arm. And there was this long silence, and then there was a beep.
Hallelujah.
Everything changed, yeah. Yeah. So I went back, and then we decided to turn that beep into something. So the beep you heard at the beginning, once the computer responds with that, and in this case it's an iPad, we can make that beep turn a switch on, for example. We can make it select letters on a screen, or we can get the computer to scan through a series of letters, and when you get to the one you want, you make a beep, and that chooses that letter. And in that process, you can send text. You can make the computer say the text out loud so it speaks for you. You can send text messages to other phones or computers. You open up all these windows and doors which were closed before.
And with computerized voice, you can speak to people who are there in the room with you.
Yeah.
For several long years, you were based in the States, and I imagine you were grinding away, just building a market and building interest and talking to various significant organizations. Recount a couple of stories about those years.
Well, it's amazingly difficult to help people when you get down to it, because in Australia, as in the States, you've got compliance. There are so many rules and laws, and they're properly there to protect people, but you just have to go through all these processes before you can even bring the technology out. And then, because the technology was so revolutionary, a lot of people either didn't believe it or didn't want to believe it. So we had a lot of therapists who had a solution that we were giving them, but they just didn't want to engage with it because they thought, we can't possibly do this, even though we showed them how it worked. So it took several years to get all the compliance done, to get therapists to see how good it was. We had some great therapists at the beginning. One from Wichita, Kansas, called Caitlin Smith, who just loved it, and she was a great advocate for us. But in the process, we started knocking down barriers. The first one was Professor Hawking. When he first saw the technology, he wasn't terribly complimentary about it, but 3 months later, he asked for it to be put on his wheelchair, so he loaded that up. James Shorey, who built the electromyograph monitors, which were the hardware which detect the signals. James Shorey and I became great friends and partners, so we worked together in Dayton, Ohio, near Wright-Patterson Air Force Base for 12 years, getting all this done. The admin, I was writing the software and testing with patients. We had a SWAT team commander in Dallas who'd been shot in the neck during a drug bust and was totally paralyzed when he woke up, couldn't speak, couldn't move, had a halo around his head, one of those steel rings that with screws in it to keep his head up so that his spine wasn't compressed. And with eye blinks, before they found us, he indicated to his wife that he did not want to live. This wasn't the life he wanted. And Caitlin turned up with a NeuroSwitch, which back then was, you know, high technology, but it was the size of a shoebox and had cables and stuff coming out of it and probably scared everybody. But she said to him, if you make a signal with this, and she put sensors on his skin, she said, if you make one signal, it'll turn the light on the other side of the room. And she'd wired it up so that it would do that. And he made a signal and the light came on. And 8 months later, he rehabbed out of hospital.
That's phenomenal.
And told his wife that when the light came on, he decided to live again.
So that was a green light for you, yeah, not a red light.
Yeah, exactly.
And so NeuroSwitch forged ahead. And I understand the Department of Veterans Administration, if that's what it's called over there in the US, has taken serious interest in this.
Yeah, they've been great. We've been doing that for over a decade now with the US Veterans Administration. And the first guy who came online had motor neuron disease, or called ALS in the States, the same thing Professor Hawking has. And American veterans have a 65% higher incidence of MND than the general public. And there are a lot of theories about it. In fact, one of the world's researchers, or leading researchers, is Professor Dominic Rowe here in Sydney at Macquarie University.
Yes.
And they're making great inroads into figuring out why this occurs. And they have very good theories now. But Gulf War veterans who went into Iraq in 91, 92, have twice the incidence of all other veterans. So you have these young guys, special forces, coming back in their 20s and getting these symptoms. So we started providing that to the Veterans Administration. We went through a lot of compliance again, but they now use this as a standard response and communication system for any of their vets who've been severely injured or have been affected by MND.
Now, let's fast forward. The last couple of years, you've made really significant or sort of exponential leaps in the technology. Talk to us about the latest iteration, which is you've called NeuroNode.
I mentioned the shoebox and a lot of cables and things. Right from the beginning, I thought to make this work, it's got to fit in your shirt collar and we have to get that small. So we just had to wait till some of the technology caught up with us. And in the process, about 18 months ago, we found a piece of technology, which was the chip we'd been waiting to evolve, and it finally was ready. We contacted the makers, we formed an alliance with them, and then we built a motherboard around that, which is about the size of a 50-cent piece. We needed a case for that called an enclosure, a tiny little case about the size of a large watch. And we found a brilliant guy here in Sydney called Michael Hort. And Michael designed in 3D, it's called CAD, computer-aided design, designed a 3D model on his computer system, emailed it to me on the other side of Sydney. We went through a couple of changes, all in 3D, all in code. And when it got to the stage that I said, yes, let's do it, I emailed it to James in the States. And within an hour, he would have been able to print that out as many copies as we wanted using 3D printers. So we're now designing in Australia, building in the States, and exporting to the world.
That's phenomenal. And doing business globally. So basically, from a user's perspective, how have you improved the technology?
Good question. When we started out, we were working on PCs, which were very good. Nobody had been that small before, but we were still aiming for something very small and portable. We went to Apple's because they had a very secure Unix-based operating system. And then we decided we wanted to go smaller. We wanted to go iPads and iPhones. And when we got this technology, we were able to develop in-house last year. We were able to bring everything together, and now the beep you heard was generated on an iPad. You can do the same thing on an iPhone, and also works on Android. We can also use it on other Apple's PCs and Microsoft PCs.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, we're down to a totally portable, totally wearable, clinical-grade EMG processor that's wireless, runs for long periods, and enables people to control pretty much anything on their computers or phones using neural-based signals, nerve-based signals.
Tune in to the next AbleQuest to hear the second part of this interview with Peter Ford, founder of Control Bionics and inventor of the groundbreaking assistive technology, NeuroNode.
You have just been listening to AbleQuest, a program that looks at developments in assistive technology. From Barbara Sullivan and Marnie Roper, thank you for listening and goodbye till next program.